Welcome back, everybody. Today we're doing a deep dive into the Book of Chronicles.
Cool, Chronicles.
Yeah, and to help us unpack it all, we've got Dr. August Kompel with us.
It's great to be here.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining us. Now, Chronicles, I mean, a lot of people, you know, they think it's just kind of this dry retelling of stuff that we've already read about, but it's got some interesting things to say about the future of Israel.
You know, that's exactly right. A lot of people think it's just a retelling of Kings and Samuel.
Right.
But it's actually so much more than that. I mean, it really is grappling with this question of Israel's identity, especially in light of what happened in 586 BC with the fall of Jerusalem.
Yeah, and Dr. Kompel, your work has really highlighted how Chronicles is actually less about the fall itself.
Right.
And more about what it means for the future.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. You know, we have to remember that the chronicler is writing after the Babylonian exile.
Mm-hmm.
And he's looking back, you know, at the events that led up to this devastating moment. But he's also looking ahead and trying to make sense of it all.
So we're not just talking about like a fall, like a sad ending, but we're talking about it as like a turning point.
Exactly. And to really understand that, we have to dive into the historical context a little bit.
Okay.
You know, we're talking about a really unstable time.
Yeah.
Egypt and Babylon are kind of duking it out for control, you know.
Right.
And in the midst of all of this, you have these kings, Jehoahaz, Eliakim, Jehoiachin, and finally Zedekiah, you know, all trying to navigate this really treacherous political landscape.
Right.
And ultimately, you know, Jerusalem falls to the Babylonians in 586 BC.
Yeah. I mean, not a happy moment in Israel's history, but...
No, not at all.
How does the chronicler present this in terms of their relationship with God?
Yeah, well, he sees it as a direct result of they're turning away from the covenant, you know, like it wasn't just bad political decisions, but it was a broken relationship with God.
Okay. So it's deeper than just,
right,
you know, the politics of the day.
It is. And you know, it's interesting because he's actually drawing on some themes that Jeremiah had spoken about earlier.
Oh, Jeremiah, like the doom and gloom prophet.
Right. The weeping prophet.
But he did have like a message of hope, too.
Exactly. He prophesied the destruction of Jerusalem, but he also talked about a new covenant.
Oh, wow.
A renewed relationship with God. And the chronicler picks up on this theme.
Okay.
And he really weaves it
into
his retelling of Israel's story.
So even in the midst of this, like, devastation and judgment, he's already starting to hint at a future hope.
Absolutely. And that's where his Sabbath theology comes in.
Sabbath theology. Okay.
Yeah. It's a really intriguing way he tries to make sense of those 70 years of exile.
All right. Break it down for me. What is the Sabbath theology?
Well, think about the Sabbath year, you know, in the Torah. Every seventh year, the land was supposed to lie fallow, rest.
That, kind of like an agricultural reset.
Exactly. Right. It was acknowledging that God owned the land.
Yeah.
It was about sustainability. But the Israelites, they kind of blew this off for centuries.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they didn't keep the Sabbath year. So the chronicler presents this exile, this 70-year period, as almost like a forced Sabbath.
Oh.
Like a time for the land to recover from all those missed Sabbaths.
So, I mean, it's not just a punishment, but it's also like a divine reset button.
It is. It's both judgment and mercy at the same time.
Okay.
It's giving the land and the people a chance to start fresh.
This is making me think about how we often look at exile like it's just punishment.
Right.
But you're saying there's more to it?
There's so much more to it.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are different ways to calculate those 70 years.
Oh, really?
Some people look at it from, you know, when Daniel was taken into exile to when Cyrus made that decree allowing them to return.
Okay.
Others look at it from the temple's destruction to when its foundation was laid again.
Interesting.
But the point is, this exile, it served a purpose.
Now, keep saying Israel, but what do we actually mean by Israel here?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Is it a place or is it something more than that?
Well, the chronicler's wrestling with that too. Israel can mean a lot of things, right?
Yeah.
It could refer to Jacob or the northern kingdom or even the whole nation descended from Abraham.
So how does the chronicler define it? What's his focus?
Well, he seems to be moving beyond just geography and politics.
Okay.
He sees Israel as a people defined by promise, by a common ethnicity, you know, but most importantly, by their role in God's plan.
So it's not just about going back to the land. It's about something much bigger, like a spiritual restoration.
Exactly. And this is where things get really interesting. The chronicler's view actually echoes what Paul would later say about Israel, especially in Romans 9 through 11.
Oh, wow. So we're seeing this connection between the chronicler way back when and Paul centuries later.
Exactly. Paul also wrestled with this idea of what it meant to be part of God's chosen people.
Right.
And he concluded that true Israel isn't about your bloodline or where you live.
Mm-hmm.
It's about faith.
It's about your heart.
Yeah. It's about being surrendered to God.
Okay. So both the chronicler and Paul are kind of pushing back against this idea that Israel is just like a political entity or just about being ethnically Jewish.
Absolutely. They're pointing to something much deeper.
So that makes me wonder, I mean, how does this change how we understand the term Israel?
Right.
When we're reading the Bible? It's not just as straightforward as we might think.
It's not. And that's why it's so important to pay attention to the context, you know, to really dig into what the author is trying to say.
I mean, this is already making me rethink how I read those passages, but let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Right.
We've talked about the fall of Jerusalem, the Sabbath theology, and this whole idea of what Israel really means. But how does all of this point towards the future?
Okay, well, that's where the gospel comes in.
Right, the gospel. So we're bringing Jesus into the picture now.
We are. You see, Paul, and we see this in Deuteronomy 2, chapters 29 and 30.
Mm-hmm.
Paul argues that it's through the gospel, through Jesus, that God will ultimately restore Israel.
Okay, so we've gone from destruction and exile to this new understanding of what Israel means.
Right.
And now we're seeing the gospel as the key to it all.
It's all connected.
It is. It is. It's like we're building towards something bigger here.
Exactly. And one of the most powerful images that Paul uses to describe this is the idea of grafting.
Grafting. Wait, hold on. I'm a city boy.
Right.
Break that down for me. What does that mean?
Okay, imagine an olive tree. The original tree represents God's covenant with Israel.
Okay.
But through their disobedience, some of the branches, they got broken off.
Okay. So those are the people who rejected God.
Exactly. But the gospel opens up a way for new branches to be grafted in.
And those would be the Gentile believers.
You got it. They become part of that covenant relationship.
Wow.
It's a powerful picture of how God's plan expands beyond ethnicity.
It's not about replacing Israel. Right.
It's about expanding it.
It is. It's about embracing all who believe in Jesus.
Okay, this is really making me rethink some of the assumptions I've had about the Bible.
It's a paradigm shift, isn't it?
It really is. And it has huge implications for how we understand God's plan for everyone.
For everyone. Jews and Gentiles alike.
Okay, but before we run too far ahead,
right?
We've talked about the fall, Sabbath theology, and this new understanding of Israel.
Hmm.
But how does all of this play out practically today, like for our listeners?
That's where the chronicler's emphasis on collective worship comes in.
Collective worship. So we're not just talking about individual faith here.
No, he's constantly reminding us that faith isn't a solo act. Mm-hmm. It's something we live out together. He highlights how important it is to gather as God's people, you know, to express our faith through worship and to support each other.
So he's pushing back against this idea that faith is just a private thing?
Absolutely. For him, belonging to God's people means being an active participant, not just watching from the sidelines.
Exactly. He'd probably take issue with this idea that Christians don't need church.
Hmm, interesting.
For the chronicler, it's about joining our voices together in praise.
Okay.
About confessing our faith as a community and being there for each other.
This is definitely making me rethink my own involvement in my church.
It's a challenge, isn't it?
It is.
To really grasp what it means to be part of the body of Christ.
And this communal aspect, it's also tied to the chronicler's emphasis on the temple, right?
Absolutely. The temple was the heart of their community.
But how does that translate to us today? Like, we don't have a physical temple.
Well, that's where things get even more interesting. Remember how Jesus referred to himself as the temple? And Hebrews does the same thing.
Okay.
So for Christians, rallying around Jesus, making him the center, that becomes our temple gathering.
Wait, so are you saying that Jesus himself becomes like the gathering place?
Yeah, that's the idea. It's not about a building anymore. It's about gathering around the person of Jesus and letting him shape our community.
Okay, that's pretty radical.
It is. And it really changes how we understand worship, doesn't it?
It does. We're seeing all these threads coming together now from the fall of Jerusalem to the spiritual Israel to the gospel being central to the importance of the church, and now Jesus as the focal point.
It's a beautiful tapestry, isn't it?
It is. It is. But what about those who aren't Christian? I mean, they're part of the story too, right?
You know, you're right. They are. And the chronicler's vision, especially when you tie it into Paul's understanding, it really does have implications for how we interact with people of all faiths.
All backgrounds.
Yeah. Because ultimately, God's love is for everyone.
So it's not about us versus them.
Right.
It's about recognizing that we're all part of God's bigger plan.
Exactly. We're all part of his creation, and he desires for all people to experience his shalom.
Okay, so we've got this big picture of God's redemptive plan, but how do we actually live that out today?
Well, that's where this idea of manifesting the kingdom of God comes in.
All right, let's talk about that. What does that look like practically?
It's about bringing heaven to earth, right?
Mm-hmm.
Through our actions, our relationships, our commitment to justice.
It's about embodying God's values in everything we do.
Exactly. And the chronicler gives us a really helpful framework for understanding how we can actually participate in that.
So it's not just about waiting for some far-off future. It's about making a difference now.
It is. It's about living out our faith in the here and now.
And that brings us back to this idea of collective worship.
Yeah.
How important is that in the whole scheme of things?
You know, I think it's absolutely crucial.
Okay.
Especially in our world today where everyone's so focused on themselves.
Right. So individualistic.
Yeah. We need those spaces where we can come together as God's people.
Where we can encourage each other, remind each other.
Exactly. And celebrate God's faithfulness together.
So it's a reminder that we're not in this alone.
We're not. We're part of something so much bigger than ourselves.
I love that. It's like the chronicler is giving us a vision
of
what it looks like to truly be the people of God.
And it's a vision that's both challenging and inspiring, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. It's a call to action.
Right.
To move beyond just believing and to actually start living out our faith.
And to do it together.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I'm curious, you know, we've talked a lot about the positive side of things, but let's be real. Living this out isn't always easy.
No, it's
there. We face challenges. We make mistakes. We get discouraged.
Right.
What would the chronicler say to us in those moments?
You know, I think he'd point us back to that core message of hope and redemption.
Oh, okay.
Remember, he's writing after the exile, a time of tremendous heartbreak.
Yeah.
But he doesn't wallow in despair. He focuses on God's faithfulness.
On God's commitment to restoring his people.
Exactly. So even when we mess up, even when things are tough, we can hold on to that hope, knowing that God is still working everything out.
It's like a reminder that failure isn't the end of the story.
It's not. It's an opportunity to learn and grow.
And to experience God's grace in a deeper way.
Exactly. God is always ready to forgive and restore.
That's encouraging.
It is, isn't it? It gives us the freedom to keep going even when we stumble.
It does. It does. So as we wrap up this part of our deep dive, is there any final thought that you would leave our listeners with?
I would say this. You're part of a grand story.
Okay.
A story that started long ago and will continue long after we're gone. And God is inviting you to play a part in it.
Wow.
It's a story of redemption, of hope, of God's unfailing love.
So embrace your role in it.
Embrace it. Live out your faith. Seek justice. Love mercy.
And don't lose sight of the hope we have in Jesus.
That's it. That's the key.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing all of this with us today.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. I love talking about this stuff.
It shows. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us for this deep dive into Chronicles.
Yes, thank you.
We've only just scratched the surface, but we hope it sparked your curiosity.
Absolutely.
And challenged you to think differently about your own faith journey.
Keep exploring.
Keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep seeking the truth.
That's it.
And we'll be back after a short break with even more from Chronicles, so stay tuned.
You know, diving deeper into Chronicles, one thing that strikes me is how the chronicler doesn't just present these historical events, you know, as like isolated incidents.
Yeah.
He's weaving them together into this grand narrative, pointing towards God's purpose.
Right. It's like we're getting this behind the scenes look at how God is working through history.
Exactly. Huh. And that brings us back to this idea of manifesting the kingdom of God.
Okay. Yeah. We touched on that earlier. But what does that actually look like?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's easy to think of it as this far-off future thing.
Right, like some utopia.
Yeah, but the chronicler is saying we can experience glimpses of it now.
Okay.
By embodying the values of that kingdom.
So it's not just about waiting.
Yeah.
It's about actively building a better world now.
Exactly. And he points to some key areas where we can start, like collective worship and praise.
So those communal gatherings, those are important.
Oh, absolutely. He's constantly emphasizing the importance of coming together as a community.
Yeah.
To acknowledge God and express our gratitude.
It's like those acts of worship become like expressions of God's kingdom breaking in.
That's a great way to put it. And those gatherings weren't just about singing songs.
Okay.
They were about reaffirming their identity as God's people.
Right. Reminding themselves of who they are.
Exactly. Reminding themselves of his promises, recommitting to the covenant.
It makes me think about the Lord's Prayer.
Yeah.
On earth as it is in heaven, you know?
That's exactly the kind of active kingdom building work he's talking about.
So we have a role to play in making God's will happen here and now.
Absolutely. And that happens not just in our personal prayer time, mm-hmm. but in how we interact with others in our communities.
So it's about putting our faith into action.
Yeah. It's about living out the love and justice that God's kingdom is all about.
And the chronicler doesn't shy away from showing us how Israel, you know, messed that up sometimes.
Right. He shows their successes and their failures.
It's a realistic picture, isn't it?
It is. It shows what it means to be a community trying to live out God's purpose in a broken world.
They weren't perfect, but they were still called to be a light.
Absolutely. And even in their failures, we see God's grace and his pursuit of them.
He never gives up on them.
Never. And that's a message of hope that we need to hear today.
This makes me wonder, how would the chronicler view how we do church today?
That's a good question. I think he'd be fascinated by the diversity.
Yeah.
He'd probably appreciate the focus on individual faith and personal relationship with God.
But what about that communal aspect we talked about?
Yeah, I think he might be concerned about how individualistic we've become.
Right, like everyone's in their own little bubble.
Yeah. Remember, for him, community was central to their relationship with God.
What about the temple? I mean, we don't really have a physical temple today.
Yeah, well, as we said before, Jesus becomes the new temple for Christians.
Okay.
But I think the chronicler would still see the need for physical spaces.
For communities to gather.
Exactly. Places where people can connect and support each other in their faith.
So it's not just about me and Jesus.
It's about being part of something bigger, a community walking the same path.
Yeah, and those communities can take different forms, right?
Oh, absolutely. It could be a traditional church, a small group, an online community.
It's about being intentional about creating those spaces.
Yes. It's about fostering that sense of belonging and shared purpose.
But it's so easy to just, you know, compartmentalize our faith, like church on Sunday and then back to normal life.
It's a constant struggle, isn't it?
Yeah.
But remember, for the chronicler, faith was everything.
It wasn't just about rituals. It was about their whole way of life.
Exactly. And that's a challenge for us, to let our faith impact every area.
Our work, our relationships, everything.
It's a tall order, but it's also incredibly freeing.
Okay, I'm starting to see that.
When our faith informs everything we do, it brings purpose and meaning to our lives.
You know, this is really making me think about what it truly means to be a follower of Jesus.
That's what the chronicler wants us to wrestle with.
It's not just about believing certain things.
It's about letting those beliefs transform us from the inside out.
And then letting that transformation spill out into the world.
Exactly. And the chronicler's story of Israel gives us a roadmap for how to do that.
It reminds us that we're part of a bigger story, that we have a role to play.
Absolutely. We're not just observers, we're participants.
We're called to be agents of hope and healing in the world.
That's a powerful way to put it. This has been such a thought-provoking conversation.
It really has, but I feel like there's still so much more to uncover.
Oh, there is.
What other insights can we glean from the chronicler as we think about manifesting God's kingdom? You know, it's interesting, as we've been talking, I keep thinking about how much emphasis the chronicler puts on the temple.
Yeah, it was definitely central to their lives, wasn't it?
It was, like, more than just a building for them.
Oh, absolutely. It was where heaven and earth met for them, you know?
Right.
The physical and spiritual center of everything.
And we've talked about how for Christians, Jesus kind of becomes that new temple.
Right, that new focal point.
But what does that actually look like in our lives today?
That's the big question, isn't it?
Yeah, like, how do we gather around Jesus in a way that the chronicler would recognize?
I think it starts with realizing that our temple isn't limited to a building or a specific time. It's more about cultivating this constant awareness of God's presence, letting his spirit guide us in everything we do.
So it's like creating those temple moments throughout our week.
Exactly. It's not just about Sunday morning.
Right. It's about carrying that mindset with us everywhere.
Yeah. And those moments can look different for everyone, you know?
Yeah.
It might be taking time for prayer, serving others.
Just trying to live out God's values in our everyday lives.
Exactly. It's about making every moment a temple moment.
That's a great way to put it. And I think that really connects to the chronicler's emphasis.
Yeah.
On collective worship and praise. Those gatherings were so important for them.
They were. And I think they're just as important for us today.
even in our individualistic culture.
Especially in our individualistic culture.
Why is that?
Because we need those reminders that we're not alone, you know?
Okay.
We need those spaces to connect with other believers.
To encourage each other.
Yes. To remind ourselves that we're part of this bigger story.
It's like those gatherings provide a kind of like anchor for us.
Yeah, an anchor in a world that's constantly trying to pull us apart.
And I think the chronicler would be excited to see how the church has adapted over the years.
I think so, too. From house churches to online services, you know? The essence is still there. Community, praise, teaching.
So that vision of a restored Israel united in worship,
yeah,
it's still alive today.
It is, in all its different forms. But let's face it, living this out isn't always easy.
No, it's not. We all face challenges and setbacks.
Right, just like the Israelites did.
So what advice do you think the chronicler would give us for those tough times?
I think he'd remind us of the message of hope and redemption.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, he's writing after the exile, one of the darkest periods in Israel's history.
Right, so he knows a thing or two about hardship.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But he doesn't let that define them. He points to God's faithfulness.
His commitment to restoring his people.
Yes. And that's a promise we can cling to no matter what we're going through.
So even when we mess up, even when life throws us curveballs,
yeah,
we can hold on to that hope.
We can. God is always working, even when we can't see it.
And the chronicler really emphasizes repentance and forgiveness, too.
Oh, absolutely. He shows us how God is always ready to forgive.
To welcome us back with open arms.
Exactly. It's never too late to turn back to him.
So it's like failure isn't the end.
It's not. It's a chance to start over, to experience God's grace.
That's such a powerful message. As we wrap up our deep dive into Chronicles, what final thought would you leave our listeners with?
I would say this. Remember that you are part of something much bigger than yourself.
Yeah, okay.
You're part of God's story, a story that's been unfolding for centuries, and he invites you to play a part in it.
Wow, that's incredible.
It is. So embrace your role, live out your faith, make a difference in the world.
And don't lose sight of the hope we have in Jesus.
That's it. That's the heart of it all.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much for taking us on this journey through Chronicles.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And to our listeners, thank you for joining us for this deep dive. We hope it's inspired you.
Yes, thank you for listening.
To see the Book of Chronicles in a new light and to discover its timeless relevance for your own lives, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep seeking God. Until next time, may you be filled with his peace and grace.